Ladies and gentlemen, boys and ghouls, welcome to a spine-tingling new episode of Guess What? You're Wrong, with your host, Big D. That's right, folks, the spooky season has arrived, and we're not clowning around. This year, we're delving headfirst into the eerie world of clown-based horror. So, whether you're a seasoned horror enthusiast or just a curious soul looking for a thrill, fasten your seatbelts because we're about to take you on a chilling ride through the carnival of nightmares. So grab your grease paint, your oversized shoes, and your funny nose if you dare, because beneath the painted smiles and colorful costumes lies a world of darkness and suspense. Join us as we unravel the mysteries, confront the fears, and explore the twisted minds behind these macabre entertainers. Now grab a front row seat and prepare for a twisted, terrifying, and utterly thrilling experience. Welcome to Guess What? You're Wrong, the podcast that proves in the world of horror your worst nightmares might just be right around the corner.
Now, before we get into this episode too far, I just got a little disclaimer here. First off, all audio used in this podcast is used under the protection of fair use. And as with all the movie reviews that I do here on Guess What? You're Wrong, we're going to spoil the hell out of every single thing we talk about. So, you have been warned. Okay, now, before we bust into this episode here, it looks like I have a little explaining to do. So, I know this week's episode was supposed to be It from 1990, sorry. But I had some unexpected events happen in my life that I had to put off recording a new episode for a week. Recently, if you follow me on any social medias or anything like that or the podcast, you know that my father recently died. So there was, everything kind of got put on hold. I had this episode. It wasn't supposed to come out until actually the week after next, but I didn't want to leave everybody hanging for a full week. So I went ahead and pushed this episode to come out on Monday. I'm going to make that up, though, because on the Friday in 2 weeks that this is supposed to come out, we're actually going to do, I'm going to release it on that day. Hopefully I can get it done by then. We shall see. And my apologies for that, but sometimes things are unavoidable and you got to make changes on the spur of the moment type of deal, trying to get things to work out properly, I guess. But like I said, that episode will still be coming out for It from 1990. And until that time, let's get back into it. Hello and welcome back to another downright bloody, violent, and groovy episode of Guess What? You're Wrong. Now today, one of these things that we've been doing here is hitting every one of these Evil Dead movies. And now we have reached to the point here where we are with Evil Dead 2013. And with me on this trip, as always, is Dave from the Piedmont Triad Podcast. How's it going, Dave?
Good, man. How you been?
I'm living life. Loving, you know, yeah, all that good stuff.
Live, laugh, love, pray.
Yeah, something like that. So this movie, Evil Dead from 2013. Now, it's mixed reviews, right? Yeah, a lot of people love it. A lot of people hate it. Diehard Evil Dead fans, I've met a lot of them that just don't really like this at all. You know, the synopsis, as I say, it's five friends head to a remote cabin where the discovery of a book of the dead leads to them unwittingly summoning demons that live nearby in the woods. Pretty much the same synopsis as Evil Dead, the first one, right?
Yeah.
This, I was torn on this one at first. You know, I had seen it when it first came out, and I've watched it, I don't know, maybe half a dozen times since then. But in preparation for this podcast, I rewatched it with kind of like a questioning mind kind of deal, you know, instead of just fanboying out and watching it to have fun. I kind of wanted to watch it and be critical of it, you know, to see if I could pick out stuff.
Yeah.
Oh man, when that mindset changed, I picked out a lot of stuff that I was like, oh no, oh, I can see why people don't like it, but I still love it. You know.
So when you were being that critical of it, you know, what were there some things that were petty where you're going, all right, look, I know that this is silly, but they really shouldn't have known better.
Yeah, I mean, the direct callback, I mean, it's up in the air as to whether this was a remake or a reboot or an extension of the universe. So when I watched it this past time, I tried watching it with the thought in my head as it being a remake. And that's when I was just like, no, I mean, there's so many things that are just, you know, direct copies from the original movie.
Yeah.
You know,
with like maybe one or two little callbacks that, you know, played to fan service. But yeah. Other than that, it's like, yeah, there's not much connective tissue.
Yeah. And, you know, but then I watched the behind the scenes interviews with cast and crew and the commentary. And I learned that Sam Raimi initially was a huge, huge proponent for the Evil Dead going forward, being remade or rebooted. Bruce Campbell wasn't, you know.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, I mean, Bruce Campbell, his deal was that he didn't want to see somebody try and overact like he did just to try and be Ash, you know.
Yeah, and that I agree with that. I think that's actually a very good idea. You know, because when you try to replicate the lightning in a bottle formula, I can't think of an example right off the top of my head that works.
It doesn't. Nothing. I mean, nothing, you know, would work, you know, this. But when they approached Bruce Campbell and they told him, look, this is not a remake where we need to remake Ash, the character Ash. This is something that's going to live on its own. It's, you know, it's they were opening it up for other younger directors to put their own spin on the story. And Bruce Campbell says he sees it now as a story that takes place in the same or parallel timeline to the original movies. The only thing that's connecting them is the Necronomicon.
Yeah.
You know, so now it's, so Rob Tappert, you know, Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell, they all say that this is not a remake. You know, it's a furthering of the story of the Evil Dead, which is something like what we saw in Ash vs. Evil Dead and in Evil Dead Rise as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, Rise in particular really kind of fleshes that idea out a little further, I think.
Oh, absolutely does.
Than most of them.
Absolutely does. And now, and that's why I don't like watching this with a critical mind, you know, with the remake mindset. I like to watch this movie and have fun with it, for what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, because when you get down to it, this movie is gory. It is graphically gory.
And I'm glad they got that right. That's one of the big things that I was worried about was when they were announcing a remake, it's like, please understand the gore is critical. And, you know, I was worried they were going to go to the PG-13 route.
Yeah.
But thank God they didn't. I mean, whoever had enough sense in their head to be like, no, 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 we got to make it more ridiculous than the original. That's the person who had the correct mindset for this movie.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, Fede Alvarez, when he was pretty much known for, you know, big CGI shorts that he was making online and stuff. And Sam Raimi had seen these things and was like, oh, yeah, let's get this guy to do Evil Dead. And the first script that Fede Alvarez was like, nah, this is not going to be good. But, you know, he handed in a cut to them and they were like, dude, this is it. This was it. And that's what they went for. Everybody loved it.
I wonder what was going on in that first script. You know, that's one thing I don't know much about is the drafts that this script went through. So I have no idea what was retained and what was thrown off to the side. And Do you have any idea about what those early scripts were like?
Well, I don't know about the early scripts, but I know that there's a lot that they filmed that was cut out. You know, first of all, when we go through this here, Jane Levy, well, let's introduce some of the cast here. I mean, I know we're talking about the movie like crazy, but, you know, Jane Levy takes the head role in this one, you know, as Mia. You know, we got five friends to go to this cabin. So we have Jane Levy as Mia, Shiloh Fernandez as David, Jessica Lucas as Olivia, Lou Taylor Pucci as Eric, and Elizabeth Blackmore as Natalie. Now, I know that there was a lot cut out with Jane Levy. She had a hugely difficult time making this part. I mean, it was terrible. I mean, when I was listening to an interview with Bruce Campbell, and he said that as soon as she got cast as Mia, you know, he emailed her and was like, hey, are you sure you're ready for this? You know, what's your
endurance? Like, I'm taking a beating on these sets. I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. He's like, what's your endurance like? Do you play any sports? Have you ever been buried alive? You know, he's asking her all this stuff. He's like, be prepared because you're going to make a movie and you'll never make another movie like this as long as your career is, but it's something you will never forget. And some of these interviews with Jane Levy, she was on the verge of quitting at time, walking away because, well, you know, when you're in the midst of something, you're like, oh, I can't take it no more.
You know, yeah.
She's a short thing too. I remember how tall she is, but she's an itty bitty thing, you know, and they're dumping gallons and gallons and gallons of blood on her. And I'm like, dude.
You know, and I got to give her credit too. She maintains her character's arc very consistently throughout the entire movie. I mean, she's given some dog shit lines too. You know, that was one of the things I was always sort of critical of this remake is the writing is pretty lame. And she was able to pull off a few lines that should have sucked, but she's a decent enough actor that she was able to make sure that you bought it.
Yeah,
so I got to give her credit. She's a trooper.
Yeah, you know, and she did this because she's a drug addict, you know, and she's recovering. She's trying to kick the habit. That's why they're all out at this cabin. That's kind of a tough love kind of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie. I mean, just seeing that opening scene, you know, where we have that little girl, the teenager Phoenix Connolly, where she's running through the woods. And they're hunting her down, you know, and they put the burlap bag over her head and they drag her down to which we later find out is the cellar at the cabin. That whole scene is just it's creepy. At first, when you're watching this, you're like, what the hell are they doing to this little girl? And then you realize that that's her dad that's doing all this stuff to her. And you're like, oh, shit, what's going on? And then she busts out with, I'll swallow your soul, daddy.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, shit. No.
It's like, oh, you tricky bastards. I was falling for it. How dare you?
Yeah, but
that's how I felt.
And did you recognize that one old lady there, that old witch?
What is she in? Yeah, I know her from something, but I couldn't tell you what.
Cyan, her name is Cyan. Wait, yeah, Cyan Davis. She plays, she's in Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Oh, shit, she's the woman from the trailer.
Yeah, Vivian. Yeah, Vivian. Yeah. Can you go ahead and get in there, get really in there, you know, Ash wants her to clean out his trailer.
That's right. Yeah, because when she, yeah, we'll get into this when we watch the show, but yeah, she's the one that's sort of the precursor to him actually getting his chainsaw hand back.
Yep, at the end of that first episode.
Yeah, that's like the first episode. Oh, that's so funny. I'm going to get a kick out of watching this again because it's been a while since I've done a rewatch on the Ash versus Evil Dead. So that's funny.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as I rewatched this, I was like, wait a minute. I know her. And I had to go back and check. And sure enough, it's her.
Good for them.
Yeah. They got her in there. That's cool. You know, one of the things too, this whole movie was filmed in New Zealand, which is becoming more and more popular with Sam Raimi and his movies. I know for sure. I think even... Weren't the Lord of the Rings were filmed over there too, weren't they?
Yeah, I believe all three of them were. Yeah,
jeez, man, must be fun to record in New Zealand.
You know, and it's funny. I always think of. Did you ever watch that show, The Flight of the Conchords, on HBO years ago?
No.
It's these two Australian guys living in New York, and they're just failing musicians, is the long and short of it. But they with the path that they walk every day to go to work. They have to go by this guy who is from India, and he's extremely racist against New Zealanders. So every time, oh, I'm sorry, these guys, I'm sorry, they're not from Australia, from New Zealand. Man, I just fucked everything up. Anyway, the joke was that they were being profiled for being New Zealanders. You could probably cut this out. I just completely told a shit story, fucked up the punchline.
Well, I'm leaving that in there. That's juice.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's what happens on a Sunday afternoon. My brain is just like, no, bro, we're on vacation. Tell the wrong story. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, you're good, man. But The Flight of the Conchords is a good show.
It's an excellent show. I do love it, and I recommend it. I hope that my poor storytelling abilities is not affecting anybody's choice whether or not to watch that. I highly recommend it.
Boy. So let's get into some of these characters here. I mean, we discussed Jane Levy a little bit here as Mia and how good she does with playing an addict and then being possessed, right? This whole scene, you know, they recreated this, the rape scene, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It was an interesting take on that scene.
And I think that this take on that scene is more disturbing than the original.
Yeah, I agree, just because you know exactly what happened with the original one. When I was a kid, there was some argument as to what happened. I wasn't 100% sure, but this one, you're like, oh yeah, yeah. If you have any basic knowledge of anatomy, you know what just happened.
Yeah.
And that's, ugh.
And just, I mean, just seeing that, I don't know, snake-like looking vine thing with thorns on it and just crawls up in her. Oh, Mia.
Yeah, it's like, you poor bastard.
Yeah, but this is all, well, she is a tortured soul to begin with, right? And she's now she has to deal with this. And her brother, Shiloh Fernandez, who's David, plays her brother. Now, I remember when I first saw this, questioning their relationship. There was some kind of animosity between them, right? Because when he shows up, she's like, surprised you showed up or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he gives her this necklace, which is supposed to be reminiscent of the original necklace that Bruce gives Linda in the first movie. And the brother, sometimes it's hard for me to really grasp, I mean, the type of person he is. You know, he's there to help his sister, but he seems kind of, you know, like, fuck it, kind of at times, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got this sort of weird, you know, WB 90210 disconnect.
Yeah.
Where he's apparently really cool and good looking, but he's very morose and you can't really get inside to what's going on with him. And yeah, his character tone is a little bit off for the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you find out if you read the contextual clues throughout the movie, and then you listen to the commentary, you find out that there was a rift between these two early on. You know, they lived with their mother. The mother had mental issues. And David, who kind of just left, you know, he wanted to protect himself and get his own life together. So he just left. He left Mia there with their crazy mom. It's basically, this is all stuff that was supposed to be, it was in a script that didn't come through. Storytelling wise. And there's a scene later on in the movie with David when Mia is possessed and she's in the basement and he's getting ready to burn it up. You know, he put gasoline everywhere and he's getting ready to drop the lighter. It's the same kind of thing. He's like, is he gonna sacrifice himself again or sacrifice Mia again just so that way he can save himself?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of calls back to that story with Mia and her crazy mom. Well, their crazy mom. So David, being a brother, I think he comes through at the end, you know, a little bit.
Yeah. I would agree. He smidge.
Yeah. He ends up saving Mia at the end, you know, bringing her back. One thing that's interesting in this is that in the Necronomicon and this Necronomicon, I think it looks pretty darn cool, you know?
Yeah.
And you can definitely see, I mean, there's writing, you know, all over it. So it's like this Necronomicon, this version of the Necronomicon has been in a lot of different hands, you know, because there's people are writing stuff, you know, there's notes in the corners and then along the edge lines and everything. But one thing they tell in this Necronomicon is that there's actually three ways to destroy one of these deadites. You know, you can, of course, dismember them, which is Ash's favorite thing, you know, and you can burn them or you can bury them alive. And this is how David ends up saving Mia. Right. He buries her alive. My guess is that she dies. She like literally dies. And then the demon leaves her. That's why he's got to dig her.
That's what I assumed.
Yeah, he's got to dig her back up and he's got to bring her back to life. And then she's saved kind of deal. Now, did you know that scene where where David's putting together that whole, I don't know what the hell, the contraption he uses to shock her heart back in?
Oh, yeah, the car battery thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a direct, they said this during the commentary, that's a direct nod to Ash building his chainsaw hand. You know, all the noises, the clicks, and the...
Oh, really?
The zoom ins to different, to what he's doing. You know, it's a direct nod to the what Ash is doing there.
You know, and that's funny because watching this, I guess this is probably the seventh or eighth time I've probably seen the movie, but there was another part that relates to what you're talking about where the girlfriend yells out a line, "Give me back my hand." Yeah. But way she says it, I never picked up on it until this time watching it, that it was literally a direct line from the original one. So now you've got this with the clicks and the noises, and now I'm starting to think, okay, there must be a shitload of Easter eggs in this thing that I have never picked up on before.
There's all kind of course, you have a Delta 88, Sam Raimi's car. He's got that in every movie. Yeah. That's in there. We have the clock that's on the wall. It's the actual original clock from Evil Dead movies. That was in the commentary as well. There was a lot of the one scene where Mia is locked in the cellar, and the cellar door comes up, and she's, "We're gonna get you." She says that, and that's directly from, you know. There's the scene where she's first possessed, and she's there, and she's screaming, but then you hear Cheryl's voice in the background. You know, from the original movie.
Right. Yeah.
So
that's right. Yep. Okay. Yeah. The other stuff I had picked up on, but I never got that. You're right.
And what does she say? I can't remember what she says now.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Brain farting.
I know. I was just thinking about it. You are going to.
I was here thinking how funny it would have been if Mia was in the basement and then they open it up and then she's just like this fat tub of shit, you know, just like from the original one. She comes out, yeah, going, "Give me a can." I would have laughed my ass off if they had done that, because it would have been so totally inconsistent with the rest of the movie, but would have been my favorite. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh yeah, this is, I tell you. Now go to Olivia Jessica Lucas. She was one of the girls there. I got to tell you, all three of these girls in here are easy in the eyes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
Jane Levy, sure. Jessica Lucas, and Elizabeth Blackmore. You're like, wow. Oh, okay, nice. Jessica is, I guess she's a PA, physician's assistant. So she's there. You know, she's got some drugs. She's trying to inject Mia to try and help her get over the withdrawals and everything. And then Elizabeth Blackmore, who's Natalie, I guess is, I'm kind of confused at who's with who, but, you know, she's the one that ends up giving my hand back.
Yeah.
And Lou Taylor Pucci, boy. He's the nerdy beard guy with the long hair, and let's talk about these death scenes or these this scene. We'll go character by character here. Mia, she's possessed. This is after her rape scene. She's in the shower, and she turns. I didn't realize that water could get this hot. But
yeah, now that was weird, because I remember something like that from when I was a kid, where I stayed at an old cabin when I was really little. And I remember my mother, or maybe even my dad, I'm not sure, but they were telling me, you know, to be very careful with the water because of the way that it's heated. It's like it was a different type of heating system, so it would make it scalding. Yeah. So, yeah, they were having to warn me to make sure that this didn't happen. So I don't think they've ever been so unregulated that you could turn it up to the point that you would blister the skin off of your body. But it was a pretty badass visual. So I played along for sure.
This scene where they finally turn the water off and she leans back and that big old blister on her face just bursts. Oh, my gosh. The visual.
And the way the skin just sort of snaps backwards.
Yeah.
That was that sold it for me. That was nasty.
Yes. These, and you know, Fede Alvarez, you know, being a CGI guy, he opted not to go with CGI in this movie. And all of these effects are all practical. And there's,
yeah, I remember hearing that and I was so pleased because it awesome. Works really well.
It does. It, you don't realize how effective practical effects are until you've seen a bunch of movies with a bunch of crappy CGI. And then you go back to a movie like this and you're like, well, yeah, practical effects are, they work a lot better. You know,
yeah, because even when you see a really fakey looking or practical effect, it still feels real on some level. Yeah. Whereas a CGI, your brain just doesn't buy it. Your brain's like, I mean, that's obviously a drawing of some sort.
Yeah. You know, and then the scene with Jessica, with Olivia, she was the physician's assistant, where she runs into the bathroom to get a syringe and some more of this drug to help sedate Mia, I guess, and she's running out, and then she just freezes, and then whatever she had in her hand drops to the floor, and she pees her pants. And this scene with her, when they go in there to check on her, and she's like, you know, the mirror had broken, and she's got a piece of mirror, and she's carving off her face.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, dude.
The noise on that one was really well done too, because they had that sort of leathery burlap sound. Yes. Like it was cutting through something tough.
And you go, I guess she's sitting in the shower, and they pull back the shower curtain to see it, and she just gives that kind of that look behind her shoulder to look back at you, and you see that her whole face. Yeah. And her everything is just
like, can I help you?
Yeah.
You know.
And then she attacks Lou or Eric. This is where, and you know, she's stabbing him with that mirror, that piece of glass, shard of glass. She stabs him with that, and then she grabs a syringe and starts stabbing him in the face. And then that scene where they do that close up where he's got that needle stuck in his eye, yeah. And he pulls it out. You can just see the skin, like you think it's real.
Looks, it's a really good effect, man. It looks very real, because even this time I knew it was coming and I'm watching it and he starts pulling on that thing. And I was like, oh, fuck you. You know, it brings out something visceral in me.
Yeah. You're holding your eye. You're like, what the, that hurts. What the shit?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh, how'd you guys do that without actually sticking a needle in his fucking eye? Cause it's, oh, that's nasty.
Poor Eric.
You know, well, he's kind of an asshole. He's
the one
that needed his sight recorrected, as it were.
Yeah, he's the one that finds the book. Well, they find the book down in the basement of the Necronomicon or the cellar, and the Necronomicon, it's wrapped in industrial garbage bags and then wrapped again in barbed wire. I would think there's a reason for that.
Yeah,
you know, I mean.
Want to open that in the middle of the woods. That seems like something like, okay, let's throw it in a bag, wrap it up. When we get back to town, let's go somewhere very public and open this thing up and see what happens.
I don't know. Then you get Evil Dead Rise.
Right?
You know, and that's, my son was telling me, he's like, if you find something like that, why would you open it? I'm like,
yeah, the barbed wire would be a big deterrent.
I don't know. Curiosity. Would you open it, Dave?
Yeah,
I probably would too. I'd look at the book. I probably wouldn't read out of it. But
yeah, I wouldn't read that shit aloud. I've come across a couple of books in French where I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, that's what Bruce Campbell said. He said, if you go camping in the woods and you find a book, turn around and leave. And I would probably break the barbed wire. I would unwrap it and take a look at it. And then I'd be like, damn, I'm leaving now.
Yeah.
I don't think I would.
Yeah, this is a scary book.
Yeah. The and then we forgot this whole scene with the bridge being out. Now, and this is another thing that I learned in the commentary here. You know, when David was taking Mia, because she's all burnt up, they were going to rush her to the hospital. They get to the bridge, and the bridge is washed out. Much like, you know, the original movie. But this was an actual flood. This was the actual bridge that they used to go in and out of this area. And Fetty Alvarez knew that it was going to rain. You know, it was forecast it was going to be a bunch of rain. And he wanted to wait to see what that bridge would be like after the rain. And so he sent another crew down there after the rain had stopped. And they were lucky enough to get, unlucky enough, lucky enough to find out their bridge was out.
That's really cool. I had no idea that he put that much effort into this practical effects thing. This makes me appreciate this a little bit more.
Yeah, I think there was a couple of spots in here that they actually used CGI. One of them was, you know, all the dead cats hanging, you see flies flying around. Those are CGI flies. And I think that there was another spot. Oh, when David goes outside and finds his dog dead, or they find a blood trail. Well, because it was raining, the blood was washing away too fast. So they had to put some CGI blood on the ground there so that way you could see it. And I think those are the only two scenes that they use CGI in.
That's still cool, though. I'm okay with CGI when it's used that way. Sort of like that Hills Have Eyes remake years ago. The guys who made that were mostly practical effects, but they enhanced much of it with computer effects and really couldn't tell the difference. And I thought that was an amazing way of doing it. So good for him. I like that.
Yeah. And with the practical effects and the kills and the they're not really kills. They're just like deadite transformation scenes, I guess you could say. This whole scene with Natalie, where her hand gets infected, and right away, and it's a callback to Evil Dead 2 when Bruce gets his hand infected, and it's, you know, the way it kind of rots away and moves up his arm and everything like that. Mm-hmm. I remember when I first saw this movie, I was like, oh man, she's gonna have a chainsaw hand. Yeah, we're not so lucky.
Right. I did wonder that too. I was curious if they were gonna do it, and I was very curious how they would pull it off without it being completely weird.
Yeah. Well, they didn't, and this scene where she takes this electric meat carver, and my God, it is so graphically gory. It is just, I mean, you see it from the angle where that knife is going down. It's an electric knife, and it just carves into her arm, you know, into her forearm, and then, oh my gosh.
And the way it just goes right through the bone.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, I can get on board with it cutting through the flesh that way. Fine. But yeah, it kind of zips right through that bone like a chainsaw. And it's like, yeah, I've used those before. They're not that sharp.
Well, then, you know, she stands up and the rest of her arm just kind of falls.
Yeah, the way it just stretches off. Oh my God. Yeah, that was such a nasty scene.
It is. I cannot say enough how I'm so pleased with the practical effects and how graphic they were in this. I just loved it. And
I did too, because it made me feel like they really did get it. It made me forgive any little, you know, sort of flaws that I could find in it. Yeah. It made me forgive that.
Yeah. I think that's got to be overall the one thing that I really love about this movie. I mean, the story, we know the story, you know, it's the same, virtually the same overall story of the original Evil Dead, but the practical effects and the way Fede Alvarez goes about telling this story, I like it. You know, I like the, because, you know, with Bruce Campbell, we have the campiness, and especially after, you know, Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness, you know, we have that slapstick where you have some horror, but you have some comedy, and it's fun, and this one is just straight up horror.
Yeah, it's actually the one I feel like it has a lot more in common with the first Evil Dead than any of the other movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and this one thing that we learned, well, that I learned is that throughout this movie, Mia never really kills anybody. You know, everybody else is killing everybody else, and Mia is just the last woman standing.
Huh.
You know,
interesting.
Because she burns herself up. Olivia carves herself up and attacks Eric. Eric eventually, you know, Natalie cuts her arm off and then gets her other arm blown off. Because Natalie comes in later on with a nail gun. And that sound of the nail gun just shooting those nails. And she starts beating, she gets a crowbar and starts beating Eric with it. And that's when I think David grabs the shotgun, good old double barrel. You know, it wouldn't be an Evil Dead movie without a double barrel shotgun and a chainsaw, regardless of how they use it. But she's beating Eric with this crowbar. David shoots her arm off, and her arm just—it's just graphic. I loved it. Let's see. We also got my notes here. Yeah. And then, you know, we have this part where we discussed, I talked about this a little bit ago, where David makes that choice. He's going to burn down the house and leave Mia again. He ends up not, but we have Mia still possessed. You know, and we already went into that, the discussion with, you know, how he buries her to save her. But then he's dead. Well, he gets killed. David gets killed, and Mia's left to, I guess, what they call the abomination is what they called this demon. And
Yeah, that's right. I forgot they call it the abomination. They have so many odd little names that they throw in here and there that makes me wonder if I overthink the canon, yeah. If that makes sense.
And that's what it kind of, again, like I've said this before, I have no backing for this, but I'm convinced that they are different Necronomicons, and that's why the Deadites are different. You know, it's like this one, you know, obviously in this one, the Deadites look completely different than they did in the Evil Dead movies, you know, with the eyes and how they act. And then we have this main demon that comes out. It's called the Abomination, where the main demon that Ash had to deal with in Evil Dead was that big tree looking thing, you know. But then Mia's battle with the Abomination, this was a scene, you know, and they filmed this movie, I think 95% of it, they filmed it in chronological order.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
That's not very normal.
I know. Normally they're skipping around, but they filmed it pretty much in chronological order. So when they were coming up to this part here, because I think it was like 7 days, it took 7 days to film this end scene, this whole end sequence where Mia is battling Abomination. And Fede Alvarez pulled her to the side and was like, look, you got to be prepared for what's coming. You know, this is going to be the next 7 days is going to be grueling. You need to make sure you're getting your sleep. You need to be eating, because this is going to be very, very physically intense. And these are the scenes where she was so frustrated. She was sick. I mean, I can't imagine being in a movie and being constantly covered with, I mean, there were scenes where she was like, she was trying to turn and say her lines, but she couldn't because her mouth and her nose and everything were getting filled up with blood. So she'd have to spit and be like, ugh. She couldn't really do it properly. I give it to this girl. I mean, she, especially seeing the behind, there was a whole little behind the scenes thing called Being Me or Making Mia or Being Mia or something like that, where
yeah.
Jane Levy basically had like a little camcorder and she was going around recording and the things, how she was doing things. And I was like, wow, you don't think about those things. You know, you watch the movie, you're like, oh man, that was a good scene. It did that good. But everything that went into making that scene, you're just like, wow, Jane Levy did a spectacular job with this. And this whole end battle scene with the Abomination, with the Jeep that falls over on her arm, and she just pulls her arm out. I mean, she just pulls it, rips it off.
The way they do it, it's so slow, and it's very reminiscent of Dawn of the Dead, where you know that guy's getting ripped apart by the zombies and you can hear his vocal cords start to screech because they're getting pulled long ways, and so his voice is getting screechy, and you're just like, oh man, this is nasty. And watching her hand just pop off that way,
you see the sinews of the muscle and everything just rip, and you're just like, and there's blood flying, it's raining blood. So, I mean, there's blood everywhere. And so it's just like, dude, it hurts.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and
you know, the blood rain in this one, that was one of the weaker effects, in my opinion. But understand why it looked the way it did, because if you were going to be filming this for that long, that would be just disgusting if you tried to make it a little more realistic.
Yeah. You can see in behind the scenes filming where they basically had these huge water hoses hooked up to these huge blood tanks, and they were just spraying. It was a lot of blood. They used a lot of blood in this. But they have this scene. You know, this is one of the things that was foretold, I guess. It was pictured in the Necronomicon. It was, you know, the blood rain and Abomination comes out of the ground. So this scene where Jane Levy is on her back with the Jeep on her arm, this was one of the scenes that she said that when she was finished with this scene, she couldn't remember if she had actually done the scene or not. So she said that she was either very, very into the part where she couldn't remember, or she was very, very out of it and couldn't remember. You know, because this scene with her laying on her back was one of those scenes that, you know, the blood rain just kept falling on her and she didn't have a chance to do anything. And there was a bunch of times where she's done with the scene and she just walks off and Betty's like, are you okay? Are you okay? You're like, wow.
Oh man. That's pretty impressive. I mean, if I was getting paid, I would probably put up with a lot of, you know, nonsense when it comes to these kinds of things. But oh man, just 12, 16 hours of just being pummeled constantly by blood rain and all kinds of nasty little special effects. Yeah, that would probably bother you mentally after a little bit.
Oh yeah, absolutely would. You know, this movie was banned in the Ukraine because of its extreme violence. Yeah, because of extreme violence.
Oh my goodness.
Funny stuff. You know, there's a lot of, you know, we went through a lot of this. There's a lot of throwbacks. You know, Mia's, when they first show Mia, she's wearing a Michigan State sweatshirt, which is a callback to Raimi and all them. That's where they came from. You know, and there's just so much about this movie that even with all the criticisms I have, I still like this movie. You know,
it's a really good remake.
Yeah. And I think that it was definitely a stepping stone for the Evil Dead franchise to branch off and do other things. You know,
like a good new beginning.
Yeah, if it wasn't for this, you know, would we have had an Evil Dead Rise?
No, I don't think so. I think Evil Dead Rise wouldn't exist without Ash versus the Evil Dead either.
Because of the popularity afterwards and everything. You know, and that's this when I watch this version over again, I can definitely see all the callbacks to, you know, why people are saying that it's a remake. I don't like to think of it as a remake. You know, if Rob Tappert and Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell all say that it's not a remake, that it's actually an expansion of the universe, I would tend to believe them a little bit more than I would much other internet people saying that it's a remake, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's all in all, I enjoy this movie. I think it's definitely a welcome change in the Evil Dead franchise. The first, you know, like I said, that it created the branch off it, being able to create something like the Evil Dead Rise. And what's going forward, you know, because they have plans on making more Evil Dead movies now, similar to this and to Evil Dead Rise, you know.
Yeah, and I'm glad that that's the direction that they're going to go with it, because I think Evil Dead works the best when it does take the subject matter seriously, but it's not Evil Dead without a little bit of wackiness. So, you know, that from here on out, I hope the movies do maintain a bit more of a serious tone, but they cannot forget where it comes from, and where it comes from is very much Raimi and Bruce Campbell and their just sort of zany Three Stooges sense of humor.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, in this movie specifically, they use a lot of that Raimi cam, you know, with the extreme close-ups at times, or the camera that is following people through the woods, like the spirit or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so through this movie, they paid a lot of respect and homage to the original movies, which I loved. And the fact that Rob Tappert, Sam Raimi, and Bruce Campbell all had so much to do with this movie in the background, I love even more. You know, I don't feel so bad for loving this movie, knowing that, you know, the people that I love from the original movies were actually behind this one as well. You know, it's same with Evil Dead Rise. You know?
Yeah, I'm the same way. If we only get an Evil Dead movie every, you know, 5 to 10 years, I'm okay with that, as long as the people who are involved, who care about it, are the ones that are behind the scenes taking care of the story. Because I think that that's a big part of why it's successful. I think that there could be tons more Evil Dead properties out there, but the fact is they seem to care about telling the story individually And so there's not like a real influx of it. And I think it's better because of it. You know, all you have to do is look at the Texas Chainsaw Massacre franchise, where you've got maybe arguably three good ones and the rest are garbage.
Yeah. Did you see that newest Texas Chainsaw?
I did on Netflix. Unapologetically enjoyed that one.
You did?
I loved the chainsaw massacring that happened about halfway through on all those influencers.
That
was beautiful. So I know I'm in the minority. What about you? Did you see it?
Yeah, I saw it. I didn't like it too much.
Yeah, I know. I fully accept my role here as an outlier on this one. I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you take some of these older franchises, you know, when we're dealing with the Evil Dead, they've done it right, you know, because they've had some of these original guys behind the scenes going forward. But when you take some of these movies like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and there's no Toby Hooper involved, there's no, you know, it's kind of just, you know, hey, tell your version of what you think could happen. It doesn't play out well at the end, in my opinion, for a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, like you said, this is one of the reasons why this Evil Dead plays so well. It's because we have the people that created it and still love it and love creating this world for the fans. You know, they know what we like. They know what we want to see. So they bring that out to us.
Yeah, I think they really enjoy making this for the fans. I don't believe that there would be nearly the longevity with this series if it weren't for them going and seem to really get a kick out of this. Let's keep making it.
Yeah. And that's the Evil Dead in 2013, the most terrifying film you will ever experience.
Ever experience.
And it was pretty terrifying. I mean, that sound, what's like an air raid siren, you know, that I can't even.
Yeah.
That they have when you
that sort of thing.
Yeah. When the deadites are on the scene, you're just like, dude, that adds to the whole terrifying experience of this movie. It's graphic. It's gory. If you like the Evil Dead storytelling, I think you will like this movie because it has that same feel of the Lost in the Cabin in the Woods type of Evil Dead movie, but it's got new blood in it. And people that get critical about this, just remember Bruce Campbell, Sam Raimi, and Rob Tappert are behind the scenes in this movie as well. So that's, to me, what makes it great. But see,
yeah, absolutely. Oh yeah. Yeah. If it weren't for the care and concern of the creative people behind the scenes, I don't think that this series would have lasted at all. So, and the fact that they were willing to try a little couple of different things here and there before they've really established a voice for the show and for the movies and just for the property in general. So it's thankfully and weirdly enough, one of the more consistent horror franchises out there. I would say that in terms of tone, The Evil Dead is probably one of the most consistent ones out there.
Yep. You know what I'd really like, and I know we discussed this before, you know, having a compendium of Evil Dead lore available.
Yeah.
As well as, you know, I want to know the different Deadites. You know, I don't know, are they different demons that are coming from the different Necronomicons? And I want to know that. I have my own theory, and I've said it, you know, several times on that. But I would like, going forward, it's if some movie in the future, like they're going to be listening to me on this podcast, you know, you know, it'd be great to bring some of that tie-in to some of the, because there's going to be more movies. You know, Evil Dead Rise was hugely popular, did great, so there's going to be more.
Oh yeah, for sure. I
just want that tie together. I want to find out what that connective tissue is between all these movies. We know what's the Necronomicon, but we've seen different iterations of the Necronomicon. Are they supposed to be the same book? Are they supposed to be different books? Inquiring minds want to know.
Yeah. Like, why is the Necronomicon? You know, they've never truly explained that. It's like, why is this thing floating around all over the place? Why do we have to keep getting tortured all to shit? What is the end goal of the Book of the Dead? You know, other than sales numbers for extracting souls from Earth.
And why is it why is it so easy to get your hands on this? Because in every movie, it's just like some people are like, hey, here, look what I got. Here. Like, dude, you would think if this book is that bad, it'd be a little bit harder to get your hands on.
Right. Yeah. You'd think some terrorist organization would have a hold of it at this point.
Yeah. You know, looking at it, we're going to conquer. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to come to your state's capital and we're going to open this book and then things are going to bleed and it's going to suck.
That would be terrible. That would be terrible there. Oh boy. That would be on the nightly news. That'd be great.
The governor's mansion suddenly had its period. We don't know why.
We don't know why. But that's it. That okay. is the.
I'm really too far with that one. My bad.
Nah, you're fine. I mean, they rape people in. They've had vines rape people in these movies. So I think a little bit of period at the mansion is not bad.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
But that's it. That's The Evil Dead from 2013. I love the movie. Dave?
I do. I love it. I think it's a great reboot, remake, everything about it. They got it right.
I love the blood. I love the gore. I love the graphic violence.
I do too.
And the girls are pretty to look at too. That's a plus.
Yeah. And they're actually decent actresses on top of that.
I cannot believe how well.
Funny. That's how that's low on the standards. It's like gorgeous and you can act.
Awesome. Yeah. Spectacular. Well, that's it. Now, the next one we were going to be tackling is going to be season one of Ash vs. Evil Dead. And that's how we're going to tackle that. We're going to tackle the season basically as one whole movie. So season one, Ash vs. Evil Dead, fun ride. I can feel it in the air already. That one's gonna be
fun. I can too. I'm looking forward to rewatching this. I loved it so much the first time. So having an excuse, people walking in, oh well, I guess you got to watch this with me now. That's a shame. I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Now, Dave, the Piedmont Triad podcast website still up and going, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, go to PiedmontTriadPodcast.com. That's where all of the episodes for the Piedmont Triad podcast are available. I am getting ready to pop up a new one next Monday with a local woman who unfortunately moved back to Kansas, but she was doing things here in North Carolina sort of a la Elvira. She was doing a lot of horror movie hosting at old movie theaters and whatnot. But unfortunately, she's moved back. But you can hear about her and her shenanigans if you ever end up in Kansas. You can listen to her and find out what she's up to. And yeah, so there'll be a couple more episodes coming down the pike sometime soon. And that's where you can find me, PiedmontTriadPodcast.com.
Nice. Now, I wanted to ask you real quick. You listened to that Army of Darkness version or the episode we did?
Yeah, I did.
You get that Bruce Campbell at the beginning?
Yes. That was fantastic.
That was all AI.
I know, man. It's so great. AI has gotten to the point where it's like, yeah, I don't need anybody. I can just make this up on my own.
I was like, wow. You know,
yep.
If it would have been shorter, I think you probably wouldn't have been able to tell so much. But I was like, what the hell? Let's give it a go.
Yeah. Go all in where he's pretty much giving you a letter of recommendation with your resume.
I'm telling you. Well, that's it. Everybody out there, sweet dreams, love, peace, and chicken grease.
As we reluctantly bid adieu to the twisted carnival of horrors and the maniacal laughter echoing in the shadows, I hope your heart is still racing and your nerves are electrified. Clowns with their painted smiles and hidden malevolence remind us that terror can wear a colorful mask. Remember, in the circus of the macabre, the line between delight and dread is razor thin. Until next time, when we venture into the darkest corners of the human psyche once more, keep an eye on the corners of your vision and a flashlight close at hand, for you never know when the circus may return to town. Sleep with one eye open, dear listeners, and may your dreams be free of painted grins and red noses.
This concludes our broadcast day. Good night, and God bless America.